I call this meeting of the House Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee to order. We're going to try to get rolling so we can get through here, so we're not stuck here too many late nights this week. First, it looks like we do have a quorum, and looking for a motion to approve the minutes from March 4th. Representative Fabian moves the minutes of March 4th. Members, any discussion to the minutes? All right, all those in favor of approval say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are passed. Motion prevails, minutes are passed, and we will move. We're going to do the motion. So we had incorrectly sent a bill to the wrong committee at a previous meeting, so it's a motion to reconsider to correct the referral of House File 3703. It was Representative Marquardt's bill. We referred it directly to local government, but it should have been sent to government operations. I will move to reconsider. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? All right. So then I will move House File 3703 be referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Any discussion, members? All right. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Where was it sent to originally?
Local government.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. Is there a reason we're doing this in committee and not on the floor?
We're all here right now.
I'm just wondering. It's a little bit different. I was curious. A lot of times we're making those arguments on the floor as we're adjusting a direction of a bill if there's been a mistake of some kind.
Yep.
The committee report hasn't been processed yet, so we're able to correct it at this point. So that's why. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? All right. Motion carries. Now let's get started with House File 4219. Chair Purcell, would you like to move your bill?
I'll move 4219, but tell me where it's going.
Public safety.
Public safety. Okay. Public safety.
All right. It looks like we have an author's amendment, the A1 amendment. Chair Purcell, would you move the A1 amendment?
I have moved the A1 amendment, Madam Chair.
And would you like to tell us at all about the A1 amendment?
I'll be very, very succinct if that's possible. And we're, if members have the amendment in front, you can see the primary emphasis of it, or what the amendment is trying to accomplish is to remove language that is contained within the current statute that refers to physical or mental disability. And that's what we're endeavoring to, we're going to take that out.
All right. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Representative Bowe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm assuming that irregardless of the condition of the individual in any way, shape, or form, operating in an unsafe manner is addressed in other ways, and so there isn't any need to have whatever in this bill. Is that a correct assumption?
Representative Purcell is
Madam
nodding.
Chair, that's correct, Representative Bowe. And this is just language that's been hanging out there for a long time, and we're just going to do it better.
All right. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Amendment passes. Chair Purcell, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this bill 4219 is intended to bring snowmobiles and other off-road recreational vehicles into the same place with regard to driving them while intoxicated on a controlled substance or alcohol, whatever, and so that they are DNR conservation enforcement officers have the capacity to looking for words here, deal with these individuals that they may encounter out in the woods, on the trails, et cetera, in the manner that they need to and without having to call a sheriff or deputy sheriff to the site. And I think you all know, there's been some really serious incidents in the last handful of years, and in my estimation, it's time to do this. Maybe past time to do it, but let's get it done. I have with me Colonel Rodman Smith from DNR to give us further insights into this and offer comments. And
all right, Colonel Smith, go ahead.
For the record, Colonel Rodman Smith, Director of Enforcement, Department of Natural Resources. Madam Chair, members, I'd like to thank Chair Purcell for bringing this forward. The DNR, just to give you a little backstory so you kind of understand what we're aiming at here, is a couple years ago, this body, I believe it was Representative New, brought language forward to create what was called Little Allen's Law. And Little Allen's Law was the first step. Little Allen was a young man who was out on the ice enjoying some time with his family when a intoxicated individual who happened to be driving a snowmobile hit and killed him. And at that time, there was light shed that there was some disparities between traditional DWIs and recreational vehicle DWIs. And so Little Allen's Law was introduced and passed overwhelmingly. And DWI law is fairly complicated. There's a lot of different moving parts and pieces to it. There's some civil pieces to it. And so while Little Allen's Law did a good job of that big first step, a lot of this stuff that is in 4219 is kind of closing the loop and conforming so that recreational vehicles and watercraft truly are treated just like if you got an impaired driving arrest and conviction if you're driving a minivan. And so there's basically two pieces to 4219, and I can walk through the bill so folks understand kind of what's in here, because there's a lot of language in here. And really what our goal is with 4219 is to make DWIs truly, it doesn't matter if you're driving a boat, a minivan, a semi, a lawn tractor, or an ATV or a snowmobile, impaired driving's impaired driving, and everybody falls under the same rules and the same consequences, and we don't have two separate things. Another good part about 4219 is currently under traditional motorized vehicle DUIs, law enforcement and prosecuting attorneys can use what's called e-charging, where everything's electronic and it walks the officer through that process. With current language, with wreck vehicles still having some differences in language on the back end of the DWI, this will bring that forward so that e-charging will be possible for law enforcement in the field, and they don't have to have two separate sets of processes to go through to charge somebody with a wreck vehicle DWI versus a traditional motor vehicle. It'll also help people that have been possibly arrested and convicted of DWIs to have a clear understanding if there's one set of rules instead of separate sets of rules, whether it's a wrecked vehicle or a traditional motor vehicle. So with that, I'll start walking through and see if we can get through this, because like I said, DWI law can be a little complex. And I know it's complex for me, so bear with me. So section one is actually going to be replacing in the repealer 8491 subdivision one, and the revisor's office just felt it was easier to totally rewrite the section. And so you'll see that 8491 is repealed in section 14, and this basically replaces it. So line 114 to 115 has a definition, and on 115, off-road vehicle, given the meaning in 169A03, that off-road vehicle definition includes ATVs, snowmobiles, off-highway motorcycles, and ORVs. So it includes those wrecked vehicles in that definition under 169A. And 169A is where all DW law is basically housed. Section 2 on 116 to 120 just says that basically you can't allow somebody else to You can't knowingly allow somebody else to drive a snowmobile or ATV or rec vehicle under the influence. Lines 121 to 124 have been removed with the author's amendment, so that is no longer part of the bill. Section page 221 to 23 is just simply states that a person in physical control of an off-road vehicle anywhere on the state or on the ice or the boundary waters is subject to 169A. So basically it says if you're on a recreational vehicle, you're subject to 169A, which is the DWI law. Page 2.4 to 2.7 is some new language. It's some conforming language, which talks about people with their instruction permit, non-resident operating privileges. This is just conforming to traditional. I'm going to refer to them as traditional DWIs, meaning minivans, pickup trucks, all that stuff.
Stop picking on minivans.
I'm sorry. Ford Fiestas.
There you go.
So just more conforming with those traditional DWIs. Section 2.8 to 2.10 talks about the Commissioner of Public Safety notifying people about revocations of operating privileges. So a person will be getting a notification that not only they can't operate traditional motor vehicles, they can't operate recreational vehicles, and the Commissioner of Public Safety will be doing that. It's kind of a one-stop shop, one-stop notification. Again, we moved on to 2.14 to 2.19. This talks about the participant in an interlock device program, and so we're just making it very clear that interlock device does apply to recreational and watercraft. It currently does, and so we're just making it very clear that interlock is part of rec vehicles. Then we get into the penalties provision. This is language that was there before. It's just being recodified again with the rewrite. And then 2.22 to 2.24 makes it very clear that it's the licensing privileges under, you see on 2.24, 17124. 171 talks about driver's licenses. And so that just takes care of that. Moving on to section two. Section two is cleanup language. So we'll see here in a little bit. If you want to skip forward, we can. But the other part of this bill is to allow conservation officers to redefine conservation officers as licensed peace officers under Chapter 169A. It's actually Section 7 of the bill. If we could just skip ahead.
Yep, well, it looks like, just for the record, it looks like Sections 4, 5, and 6 mirror the first couple sections just for boats instead of vehicles.
Exactly.
Okay, yep, then that's, as long as it's fine with everybody else, let's go ahead to Section 7.
Just boats, okay. So Section 7 is you can see in 518 to 519, conservation officers under current law are only considered peace officers under Chapter 169A, which is the DUI language for recreational vehicles and motorboats. In fact, this change in Section 7, Representative Christensen already has a bill that went through public safety, and it's on the floor right now. It's been sent to the General Register, just changing Section 7. And so that was heard in this committee last year. It made it through the process, but at the end of the session, it didn't make it into any final packages. And so the Public Safety Committee and Criminal Reform already passed that on to the floor with a date change. And so that's on the floor today. Section 8 continues to talk about some more conforming language. So you can see in 5.23, there's some language crossed out about motorboats and off-road vehicles. Again, that is picked up in that definition under 169A03 under motorized vehicles. Let's see, section, I guess the next change would be section 6.9. So this is section 9, line 6.9 to 6.17. That just talks about test results or test failures and revocation. So this is conforming language to make it just like traditional motor vehicles. Section 10, which is 6.18 to 6.25, talks about conviction and adjudication for revocation. So if a person's convicted or adjudicated, again, this is conforming language for traditional DWI. Section 11 for 626 to 631, these are the, again, 171 is the driver's license statutes. And so it talks about the canceling and revoking a driver's license to conform with traditional DWIs. 7.1 to 7.4 talks about the commissioner of public safety notifying folks. Again, this will be at the same time they're notified if they had a traditional motor vehicle. And then, let's see, section 12, 7.5 to 7.10, again, talks about interlocks for recreational vehicles and how interlock is associated with their driver's license. Section 13 is some boilerplate revisor instruction because DWI law is kind of complicated. It allows the revisor to make some tweaks here and there to make sure everything reads right. On the repealers, so you can see on the repealers on section 14, line 718, it's this is repealing 169A.20 subdivisions 1A, 1B, and 1C. And you can see on the appendix what those are is currently, and this is where some of this e-charging stuff happens. The old language broke out. It's 169A.20. They had 1A was for motorboat operation, 1B was for snowmobile and all-terrain vehicle, and 1C
and
was
actually,
for...
Actually, Colonel Smith, members should have this in their packets. So I think we're probably good.
All right.
Always read the repealers, yeah. Yes.
All right. Anyway,
for sure, but I just to members, you should have these in your packets. Are there any members of the public wishing to testify on this bill? Thank you, Colonel Smith.
Yep.
I'm sure there might be questions, so don't go far. Right, please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ray Bone. I'm here today representing the All-Terrain Vehicle Association and the Amateur Riders of Motorcycles, District 23. First of all, I want to apologize to the chair for not getting to him on this bill. I just read it over last night and this morning. And also to staff for not sign up to testify. AFAM and ARNCA have always supported the DUI legislation. We supported it, I believe it was 2 years ago when it happened. What we've always said, as long as we're treated like the cars, we don't have any, like everybody else, we don't have any trouble with that. This bill is for some reason very confusing for me that, you know, putting everybody, we don't call ourselves recreational, off-highway recreational vehicles. We call ourselves ATVs, ORVs, dirt bikes, and 4x4s. So that got very confusing. And then I looked at the repealer, I was saying, well, this is all the good stuff we passed 2 years ago. So I've not had a chance to consult with DNR on this. I see some other issues. There's some talk about some cross-pollinization between public safety and people losing their driver's license and losing the ability to drive ATVs. Well, we don't have licenses. We have registration. We register the machine, not the person. So I don't know, and maybe I'm misreading that. I don't know exactly how that would work. But anyway, we'd actually done something similar to this a number of years ago when we, to penalize people that were, for example, in wetlands, wrecking a wetland. We had passed legislation, in fact, I think it's probably still in the books, which would have basically said people couldn't ride their ATV for a year. It was very egregious, a very egregious act. But we could never enforce it because, again, you can't take their license away. In fact, you can't even take their registration away because a family member may want to ride that. It's like taking away a car. You can't necessarily do that. You can take away that person's ability to drive the car. But the licensing, that doesn't seem to work from what I understand. And maybe maybe I'm not interpreting that correctly, but it seems just seems overly confusing, to be honest with you. And this is something I don't think that I thought the way we had done it 2 years ago was pretty good. So I guess I don't know what we're trying to fix here. And I've not, I apologize, I've not had a chance to talk to Colonel Smith, and we do work together on stuff like this. It's just, the bill just came out, so I really haven't had a chance to. So what I'm saying is that I would like to reserve judgment on this until we've had a chance to have a thorough discussion with DNR and with the author of the bill.
And you're welcome to, if you want to send a letter or anything to the CA, we can pass it on to committee members whenever that's available.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you. Anyone else in the audience wishing to testify on this bill? All right, we got some member questions. Representative Liz Lagarde.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the questions would be, so if you did get a DUI, you would not be able to drive an ATV during that period?
Madam Chair, Representative Liz Lagarde, yes. And so that's really under current law as well. And so under current law, if let's say you get an ATV DWI, you can have your ATV privileges to operate an ATV revoked. And they have the same thing for motorboats. It could be, I think it's 30 days or 6 months or something like that. But they're all kind of a little bit different. So here, under this, under existing language, you could have a DWI in a car, not a minivan, and have your ability or your right to drive an ATV, snowmobile, or watercraft revoked as well.
Representative Liz Lagarde.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if I understand it right, the existing law, if you got a DUI, you could lose your rights as of it stands, not in this bill. Or is this new law now going that extra step?
Colonel Smith.
Madam Chair and Representative, yes and yes and kind of no. So I'm sorry, it's been a long day.
I think I'm with Ray. I'm more confused now.
No, so.
Try reading the bill.
There are. And I tried to say at the beginning, DWI law can be very complex. So right now there are different timelines for revocation periods depending on the machine or depending on the apparatus. What this is trying to do is do a better job of conforming those so that when a person is convicted of, if a person is convicted of driving under the influence, the timelines of what their revocation is for, whether it's a traditional motor vehicle, boat, snowmobile, ATV, they're all the same. And so a person doesn't have different revocation periods of where they're sitting out.
Representative Liz Lagarde.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'll move on to that because I am confused with this. But I want to go underneath subsection 2, and it starts at 1.16. And it says that an owner or other persons having charge or control of an off-road recreational vehicle must not authorize or allow an individual or the persons to do it. And then you go down and it says underneath, it's a different situation, but it says must not knowingly authorize. Now one is alcohol and one is not, but what is the penalty if somebody had two beers? I mean, I don't know, you don't know, and then they're driving and I own it, or I was in control of it and I allowed them. What happens to that individual?
Colonel Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative Liz Lagarde. So the language in 1.6 to 1.20 is in current law. Because there were so many changes to Chapter 84, 91, the reviser just wanted to rewrite it all. So if you look at the repealer in Chapter 84, 91, Subdivision 1, that language is current law. So that's current law. Section lines 121 to 124 is current law, but that's also just been repealed through the amendment, so that won't be in the bill anymore. The difference is a person can be charged with allowing somebody to operate an ATV or snowmobile or rec vehicle if they think that if they're under the influence. Has that happened? I don't believe we've ever done that. I think it might be more of a civil issue. But, I believe it would be a misdemeanor under Chapter 84, 91.
Representative Lothgaard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is that subjective? I mean, who would make that call to put somebody in that position?
Colonel Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative Lothgaard, I think what would it would most likely be, well, it would be a result of this would have to be something that a county attorney would charge. And so it wouldn't, you know, an officer could probably do a tab charge, but more than likely it's going to be part of a bigger case. And with any citation that a conservation officer or a trooper or anybody, there's always a stopgap with either a county attorney or a city attorney that formalizes those charges.
I'll remind members this is going to public safety next, so we're trying to focus on the environment policy. You know, should we be treating these other vehicles the same as we treat minivans, Ford Fiestas, other vehicles? Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is for the section 6 that we kind of skipped over, and in there the stricken language from the current law says that part of this money goes to the county, and that's taken out, and it looks now that money is going to be deposited in the state treasury. Have you consulted the counties on this? Because over in the other stricken language on 5.3 down through 5.7, it also has some of the same language that the money used to go into the counties for, I would assume, for trying these cases or whatever the case may be, or either whether it's their officers that are doing it, they need some compensation for that. So that is stricken, and now the money goes into right to the state or into other accounts.
Colonel Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative Green. So much like the amendment that Chair Purcell brought forward about the physical or mental disability, because that was old language, there's some old language sprinkled in here as well. So about, must be 15 years ago, probably, all the court systems were run at the county level. And about 10 to 15 years ago, I can't remember quite when, the state took over all the court administration process throughout the state. So every county court, the actual court admin is the state of Minnesota. It's no longer the, and so these dollars right now aren't going to the county, they are going to the state because the court administration is state run. And so we're just trying to clean up the language because this is old language from when that happened.
Representative okay. Green.
So,
okay, thank you for that explanation. The others, I don't know if you can respond to it, I guess, if you want, but in Section 7, where you're actually making the conservation officers now peace officers, and I'm assuming that's a pretty big step, because now you'll have more responsibility and be out there writing a lot more tickets. And I want to tell you that I like conservation officers, especially in our area, because sometimes we don't have police officers very close. So this isn't a criticism per se, but it does open the door to a lot of other stuff where, you know, if you're going to be acting as peace officers now and you're writing tickets for county, speeding tickets, are you going to be writing violations on the highway for DUIs, are you, you know, and then at that point then does the DNR come back to the state or the county and say we're doing part of your work and we want part of your money?
Colonel Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative Green. So the change in Section 7 is for the definition of peace officer under 169A. So there is a different definition of peace officer in Chapter 609, which is traditional criminal code, and conservation officers are defined as peace officers there. A number of years ago, when Chapter 169A was recodified, conservation officers were taken out of the definition of peace officer, except for the ability to write DWIs for snowmobiles, boats, ATVs, and hunting while intoxicated. So really the only change Section 7 does is says that for DWI statutes under Chapter 169, in that particular definition, that conservation officers are defined as a peace officer without any other prohibitions on it. So really this change in definition is only narrowly tailored to DWI law and open bottle.
Okay.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quick checking, Colonel Smith. Will this bill change any existing penalties for DWI?
Colonel Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, so I'll say it again, DWI law is complicated. So it will have an effect on some license revocation for folks that may have gotten a DUI on an ATV, because it will be conforming to traditional motor vehicles. And so as far as criminal penalties, it will not make any changes in criminal penalties. It's going to be making those conforming changes, my understanding, with the license revocation, interlock, and any of the other civil and then technical pieces that move through. And then in the future, it'll be much easier as well, because you won't have changes to DWI law that may or may not affect recreational vehicles or watercraft.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm reading in section or subdivision, I guess, 3A, 7.7, 7.10, about an off-road recreational vehicle interlock system. And I did some Googling, had a hard time finding it. I'm assuming it's out there. Just want to confirm that that technology is readily available for those that want to apply it to a off-road vehicle or a motorboat.
Colonel Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative Heintzman, you are correct. It would make recreational vehicles part of the interlock program. And right now, there is not an interlock system designed for ATVs or snowmobiles or boats, just as like there is not an interlock system designed for traditional motorcycles like a Harley Davidson or something like that. And so I think that's something the industry is working on. But to my knowledge, and I talked with Department of Vehicle Services staff today, if you have a street motorcycle and you're part of the interlock program, you park that bike until you're done with the interlock program. That would be the same way with wrecked vehicles.
All right. Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe I'll ask a question kind of on the lines of Representative Heintzman, but in a different approach. If you got an individual that's an adult that possesses a current valid Minnesota driver's license, and they get into a mess with their motorboat out on the lake, and they're essentially picked up for operating under the influence of alcohol in their motorboat, what happens, or what can that individual then likely just go right over to the same circumstance as far as penalties, loss of license, if they were tuning along in anything other than a minivan on the highway? In other words, what I'm trying to figure out here, does this really change existing law? If you get picked up for drunk driving in your boat, does that immediately put your car driver's license or your CDL at risk?
Colonel
Likely
Smith.
You're going to lose it.
Madam Chair, Representative Lewick, yes. That's what Little Allen's Law did.
Okay, well, that.
Representative Lewick. Yeah,
thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm assuming then that would apply to ATVs and snowmobiles, obviously. So at this point, we're not changing that relationship, even though we're changing a lot of language.
Colonel Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative Lewick, you're correct. Little Allen's Law made that baseline, and now we're trying to make some conforming changes to make things, I guess, maybe it's a bad way to say it, but on the back end of the conviction and the arrest and all the other stuff, these are those changes that we're making on the back end. The front end change has already been made, where if you get the DWI and a watercraft, it does affect your traditional driver's license.
Representative Lewick.
I'm just trying to get that in my mind without, as to are we fundamentally changing that? And the answer short is no. I can live with that.
All right, Representative Bowe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colonel Smith, I want to just make sure that I'm clear. When I see influence of alcohol, that makes sense. When I see intoxicating substance, that makes sense. But controlled substance is a little fuzzy. When I start looking into that, in the federal regs, I see controlled substances, Schedule 4 and 5, can be something as, the widely prescribed Xanax, Robitussin. a drug to control irritable bowel syndrome or fibromyalgia. There's a lot of stuff that are still considered controlled substances. So like 5.26 says a person under the influence of a controlled substance. How do we test for influence when it comes to something that obscure?
Colonel Smith, and again, I'll remind members that we're going to public safety next, and that we're really trying to focus on whether we should be treating our ATVs, motorboats, and other vehicles the same. Colonel Smith, you can go ahead if we can keep it short.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Bull. So all those things are defined in Chapter 169. So intoxicating substance, for example, not too long ago was just that definition of intoxicating substance was changed to include aerosols that people huff.
Yep.
And so those controlled substance, those are, that's all defined in Chapter 169A.
And the ability to, oh, sorry, Madam
Representative Bow.
And is it, does it describe there how that determination is made for influence and such? Or, because otherwise it seems like it's a gray area.
Yeah. Colonel Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe so, yes.
All right, Representative Anderson.
Thank you.
An environment policy related question, please.
Pass.
All right, Representative Anderson, keep it really short.
Thank you for your indulgence, Madam Chair. Say my buddy comes over to my place in the wintertime and maybe has a beer or two, and then I borrow my snowmobile. He goes to a bar, has another beer, and then gets picked up. Could the owner of the sled be held liable?
And I will remind folks that this is not a law school class of hypotheticals. But Colonel Smith, a quick answer, and then we want to get rolling.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, possibly.
That was short. Good job. Representative Purcell, any closing comments on your bill?
Sure.
Oh, Representative Fabian.
Thank you. So, environment policy question. So the funds that are collected in the fines and so forth are being transferred, credited to the general fund, and half must go to the game and fish fund. Whose idea was it to put it in the game and fish fund?
Colonel Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, there's actually three different sections that talk about the fines and where they're deposited to. And let me see if I can find them because I've been flipping my pages and they're a little bit out of order here. So section five, hold on, that's not the one I want to go to first.
Section three is the first one that talks about.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, section three, I'm sorry. Madam Chair, Representative Fabian. So section three is the first one. If you see there's some existing language in there, it says the disposition of fines on 3.2 from prosecutions of sections violated on 3.3 of 8481 to 8491, which is stricken. 8481 to 8491, those are snowmobile violations. And so 8491 has been repealed in the repealer, so they drop this down to 8490. So prior to this change, half of the stuff was going to the general fund and half was going to the snowmobile account. And then you see, I think the other one you're looking at is some cleanup language in section six about 97A065, where on line 4.23, for some reason they talked about snowmobile statutes in game and fish law, so we wanted to get rid of that, and we had some talked about the county treasurer and all this stuff, and so we tried to clean that up and then say that any game and fish related citations, half goes to the general fund and half goes to the game and fish fund. And so it's not really new law, it's just kind of cleaning up some of the existing stuff.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, and Colonel Smith, so then are there provisions in here where if you're on an ATV of some sort, half of the money would go, like for snowmobiles, to the snowmobile trails and enforcement account? Would it go to an ATV account?
Colonel Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, no. There's only three parts that were in existing law where the fines went to an account. So under snowmobile, fines under existing law, half goes to the snowmobile account. Under existing law, for watercraft, half the fine goes to water rec, and under game and fish, half the fine goes to the game and fish account. So we didn't really change anything. We didn't, if that's a discussion we want to have at another time about having that, that's obviously something that this body could do.
Represent Fabian?
Yeah, okay. So I would strongly encourage that if we're going to be moving forward with this, this is really confusing to me, and I'm disappointed, quite frankly, that the bill was introduced on the 5th and we're having a hearing today. It doesn't sound to me like the stakeholders who are normally involved in these types of things have been consulted, and I think it could have been handled differently. But that being said, I heard you talk about the front end and the back end. Are there provisions in here that are going into effect now that are going to go back and get somebody who did something now when this bill becomes law after it's enacted?
Colonel Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, no, I don't believe that would work that way.
Okay. All right. Well, I just don't think
Representative
this is
Fabian.
Ready for prime time, Madam Chair, and it's... Thank you.
I will note for the record that it looks like the draft of the bill was February 11th of this year, and the 5th was 5 days ago. Not sure why the bill wasn't dropped sooner, but I think 5 days is plenty of time to look things up and take a look at the language. Representative Purcell, any closing comments?
Just thank you, Madam Chair, members, for the discussion. And this is still a work in progress, no two ways about it, but we've arrived at something. We're ready to have a conversation and appreciate the conversation and support for this. Overall, this is a good move forward for the state of Minnesota.
All right. Thank you, Representative Purcell. Chair Purcell renews his motion to refer House File 4219 as amended to the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform, Finance, and Policy Division. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. The bill is on its way to public safety. Next bill on the agenda is House File 3833, Representative Wolgamott. And I will move that House File 3833 be referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Representative Wolgamott, please tell us about your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. I'm here to present House File 3833, which simply clarifies language regarding stormwater rules as applied to cities, townships, and platted areas within those jurisdictions. Madam Chair, this is correction language for a bill that we passed last session for growing urban areas to be covered under stormwater rules. This clarifies that it exempts rural townships. And with that, Madam Chair, I have a testifier who can explain the bill, and then we'll be in further detail, and we'll be happy to answer any of the questions that you may have.
All right. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Chair and members, my name is Brian Martinson. I'm a policy analyst with the Association of Minnesota Counties. Last session, Representative Wolgamott brought forward House File 2266 to address some issues related to stormwater permits for townships. That bill was agreed to and passed in your Environment and Natural Resources Omnibus Bill during the special session. After the special session closed, it was brought to our attention by the PCA that they were interpreting the language to mean that regulated MS4 counties were now regulated outside the urbanized area and in all other platted areas within that jurisdiction. It was agreed by the agency and the members that this was not the intent of the new language and that the agency did not desire to apply the law in that manner. However, they did believe that we should make a correction, and that is the language that you have before you today, simply to put the language back into the order that was intended by the legislation Representative Wolgamott brought to you last session.
All right. It looks like we do have another testifier on the list. Is anyone else here to testify for House File 3833? Maybe they didn't like the evening hearings.
I believe
Mr. Martinson.
Mr. Massman, sorry, Madam Chair, I believe Mr. Massman is testifying on another committee at this time.
Okay, tis the season. Any discussion to House File 3833? Representative Lewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
No hypotheticals, please.
No. I just want to ask the testifier, we are eliminating unorganized areas of counties. I believe the intent was that was unorganized townships. But is this in any way going to conflict with what the county's responsibilities are right now relative to unorganized townships? And, you know, they are the town board, they are the road maintenance folks, they are the levying authority.
Mr. Martinson.
Madam Chair, Representative Lewick, no, this will not change those dynamics or the authorities that currently are in place. That language referencing the unorganized areas of counties was put in by Senate staff and was what confused the issue for the agency. So we are here today to correct that.
All right, well, that all makes sense.
If I could.
Representative Lewick.
That makes absolute sense, because I guess our friends over in the county or over in the Senate would unorganized areas of the counties. I don't know. Some of us have served on town board or both town boards and county boards, and we like to think we were pretty organized, you know. But I guess I understand. Came from the Senate.
All right. Representative Wolgamott, any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members.
All right, I will renew my motion that House File 3833 be referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. You're on your way to Government Operations. All right, next we have House File 4010. I will move that House File 4010 be referred to the Water Division. This is Representative Jordan's bill, and it looks like we do. Is this for amendment? Okay. All right. So I see that there's an author's amendment. I will move the A1 amendment. Representative Jordan, do you want to speak to your amendment?
Sure. Madam Chair, would you like me to speak to the amendment or speak to the bill?
Let's speak to the amendment and get that on there, and then move forward.
Sure. This is, Madam Chair, this is a clarifying amendment on non-carcinogen toxicants to match the language on carcinogens.
All right. Any further discussion to the amendment? All right. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment passes. Your bill is now amended, and I will move House File 4010 as amended be referred to the Water Division. Representative Jordan, please go ahead and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good evening, members of the committee. I'll be brief. I'm here today to present 4010, which is a bill that will allow Minnesota to use the most recent and best possible science to protect all of us from exposure to harmful pollutants through our groundwater. Minnesota Department of Health sets health risk limits for groundwater, which determine health protective limits for concentrations of chemicals and possible carcinogens in our groundwater supply. Currently, MDH must rely upon data from the federal EPA, so this means that MDH and the health and well-being of us all is reliant on data that's not always the most up-to-date or accurate. This bill will enable MDH to use other data and studies that have undergone scientific review, so often information received from other sources and even other states is quicker to follow the most recent research and science. This bill does not preclude MDH from using data from the EPA, but rather enables the commissioner to use the best information to protect Minnesotans' health and well-being. In short, House File 4010 is more protective of Minnesota citizens and our groundwater. With that, happy to answer any questions you might have. Got some folks from MDH here as well, and we can take any member questions.
All right. It looks like we have Assistant Commissioner Tim John on the list, or someone else from the Minnesota Department of Health. All right. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Members of the committee, Madam Chair, my name is Tom Hogan. I'm the Environmental Health Division Director with the Minnesota Department of Health, and I am here to answer questions that you may have.
All right. Want to get through testimony first. Are there anyone else here to testify on House File 4010? All right. And we'll go ahead with questions. Representative Lewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier, does the Department of Health specifically support this, take on this responsibility directly?
Mr. Hogan.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is a responsibility of the Department of Health under the Groundwater Protection Act.
Representative Lewick.
I understand, but this basically, rather than to work with, you change the word and is changed to or, so this looks like you unilaterally would be able to operate completely independent of EPA within reason. That it may look like a subtle change, but looks to me like it stands your agency up as a completely standalone to develop their own set of standards beyond what EPA has.
Mr. Hogan.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the OR actually allows us to use other scientifically reviewed studies, not specific to the EPA. So it's not necessarily studies that the health department performs, but other scientific studies.
Representative Lewick.
I know this is obviously not a finance committee, but where's this, Madam Chair, where's this going?
This is going to the Water Division, Representative Lewick.
It would seem that there's a cost element to this, because while it may look like an inconsequential change, and or do we have any concept if this is going to change the organization within your agency relative to new staff, other staff, moving staff, adding staff?
Mr. Hogan.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, no, we don't think this will change the staffing needs. It's just allowing us to use existing studies that are out there in the public.
Right. Representative.
One quick question. Did the agency, do you specifically as an agency ask for this change?
Mr. Hogan.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, we have.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just clarifying a little bit further to the testifier, the amendment that was put on here, the A1, talks about the last few words of it, if I can cite that. Where's I'm looking for the amendment. Here we go. Line 1.3 of the amendment. Says the commissioner then to have gone to undergone thorough scientific review. Does that, to you, sir, that means that it's good peer review science?
Mr. Hogan.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I read this, and maybe I'm overreacting, but I don't think so, this is a huge change to current policy here in Minnesota, and I'm going to ask a hard question because I think we deserve a good answer. Can you give me an example, and this is to either the testifier or the representative, an example of one or more other federal standards established by the federal government that the DFL believes we should be abandoning in favor of our own standards?
Mr. Hogan.
Madam Chair, I'm not exactly sure I understand that question.
I can clarify.
Representative Heintzman.
To the representative, then, can you give me some examples of other standards that the DFL believes that we should be abandoning federal standards in favor of our own? What are we going after here?
Representative Jordan, and I'll remind members, I'm pretty sure she's speaking for herself and not the DFL overall. So, Representative Jordan.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Heintzman. This is just a bill that allows us to use the most accurate science that has been undergone peer review. So this is something that allows us to use research done in other states or by other organizations to give us the most protections that we can when evaluating our groundwater. There's no, Madam Chair, undermining of any kind of federal organization. And in fact, if the EPA is found to be the most up-to-date and is accurate for the health department, they can still use it as a tool.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Jordan, I'll try again. Can you give me an example of why we need to move this language forward? And we'll be probably asking the same questions again in the next committee. And so if you don't have any examples here today, maybe you can provide them to the Waters Committee. But there must be something that we're looking at doing here, or an example of another federal rule that we don't like or you maybe don't like. Can you provide any example at this time?
Representative Jordan.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't have a specific example, but this allows the health department in Minnesota to use the best possible research to protect our groundwater. So that might be the EPA, that might be data from another state, but this is giving our health department every possible tool they need to protect our health.
All right, Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Jordan, what are the problems? I mean, you're taking what we work very hard in the state is to put policies in place where one person can't run away and dictate to the rest of the state what's going to happen. And this, what your bill is doing here, is you're giving the commissioner the authority to decide for themselves what they're going to use. Now you can take all the examples you want, but the commissioner could actually go into anything he wanted and say, boy, this looks like good research here. No safeguards, no nothing. So what has been happening that prompted this change to take these safeguards out and give one person this kind of authority?
Representative Jordan.
Maybe Mr. Hogan can speak to that, Madam Chair.
Mr. Hogan.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, you know, the language speaks to that it's undergone thorough scientific peer-reviewed science. And I think the thing that we struggle with is the EPA, for various reasons, isn't able to keep up with that science. So there's more current information available that's proven, and that would allow us to use that more current information.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. It's not what this language does. This language gives the commissioner the authority to decide what they would like to have to make their decision on. There's no definition here. It's just using the risk assessment methods. There it is. What do you want to do? Here's your options, Commissioner. You can do whatever you want. Pick what you want to go here. There's no safeguards in place now. It's all your decision. And that's what this does. Bad bill.
All right. I don't think there was a question there, so we'll move on to Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think when you look, maybe to help a little bit on this, EPA methods are a floor. We invest in all kinds of science and research here and have been proud about it. And we've been proud about looking at degradants and looking at endocrine disruptors and looking at things that the federal government is too slow to follow up on. So when we're on the cutting edge and it's been published and reviewed and gone through that peer review, we've had a history of supporting that type of science. I think all this bill does is says if we have defensible science and having worked in agencies, if you make a decision on it, it better be defensible in court because it's going to come there. So it's going to have to be defensible in court, and that scientific review is going to have to stand up. So what the bill is doing is enabling using our best science that we may invest in. And if we look at whether it's been endocrine disruptors on fish or whether it's been looking at the degradants of atrazine or whether the components of PFAs, and I can't name them all, but what is the cumulative effect? What are those individual effects?
because usually the federal government is pretty slow at basic effects. So I think this is a good bill, and we shouldn't be afraid of the research that we fund and invest in, because we have a history of doing that and making sure that we have the best available science to use, not just the floor, but reaching for the ceiling for data.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I thank you, Representative Hansen. I just want to add to that a little bit. My recollection is that it was stated early on that the Department of Health requested this. Is that correct the testifier?
Mr. Hogan.
Madam Chair and members, that is correct.
Okay, thank you. And I,
Representative Purcell.
Representative Heintzman, you had a question about what are we trying to fix. I'm paraphrasing here, but I would just offer to you that, you know, we talk about what EPA has done, what they haven't done, what the federal government's done. It's stuck in my craw big time about Agent Orange and what the federal government did not do for our veterans until 2003, and that was 30 years after they'd been exposed. So when Minnesota, we're going to act when we know we need to act, and Department of Health requested this, it seems pretty clear cut. So thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Would Representative Heintzman want to respond to that first, Madam Chair?
I'm going in order. Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, I pretty much believe or agree with what you said, but again, and we're wordsmithing here, but the current language doesn't preclude them from doing exactly what you're saying. It says, and do those two in tandem with each other. And you could say that the way the new language says, it's either or. They could use EPA data or commissioner's data. So in a way, it weakens, I think, your argument that they could use the latest data, because the way it's currently written, they have to use both the EPA and the commissioner's scientific review. In the way it's, the new language says, it's either or. And in a way, it could weaken the intent of the bill.
Representative Lewick.
Just real quick for the testifier, can you cite specific examples where the EPA has blocked some of the good work that Representative Hansen talked about? Said, no, you guys in Minnesota, you've done a risk analysis and you're doing X, Y, and Z, and us and the EPA are telling you, nope, you can't do it.
Mr. Hogan.
Madam Chair and members, EPA doesn't block that activity. This speaks to the type of scientific information that's available to us to do our work. And they don't step into that process.
Well, just a quick follow-up. I mean, do they block your access to other... I mean, I'm still looking for the reason to change and or, and I don't see it, and that's all I'll say.
All right. Mr. Hogan?
Again, back to the language, Madam Chair and members, it allows us to use either the EPA's scientific information or other peer-reviewed scientific information that may be more current than EPA's.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you for the opportunity to respond, Madam Chair. So, Chair Purcell, I can wind back the clock here. The question that I was presenting to the representative was very similar to what Representative Lewick just mentioned. Can we provide an example? And so far, none of my friends on the other side of the aisle or the bill author has been able to provide a single example of why we need to change this letter in the bill. And I'd follow that up, Representative Jordan, with the question. I'm looking at lines 1.16, 1.17, and I don't know what this means, so maybe the bill author does. By the commissioner to have undergone through scientific review, I'd like to know what the difference is between scientific review and peer review. Maybe you know one could explain it.
Representative Jordan.
Madam Chair, Representative, I interpret scientific review to be peer-reviewed. that would be what the commissioner would determine as well.
Representative Heisman. All right, and Representative Wiginius. All right, we're good. All right. Representative Jordan, any closing comments?
Nope, thank you for your time.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 4010 as amended be referred to the Water Division. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
We have a Becker friend bill, House File 3735. Representative Becker friend, would you like to move your bill, please? And it's going to the being referred to the general register.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move my bill, House File 3735, to the general register. And I can go ahead and
very good. We have the bill in front of us, so please proceed.
Yep. This is a bill that's actually related to child support and suspension of licenses. And as the law currently stands, there are all kinds of different penalties that can happen to you if you get too far behind on your child support. One of those things is that your recreational licenses can be taken away. And as things currently stand, we don't have an easy way for a person to get their license back once they've met their child support obligation or the court has determined that they're okay on their obligation. And so this would make it clear that either the obligor, obligee, or the public authority, so either the person who owes the child support, the person who was owed the child support, or the public authority now has a clear way to move forward so that people can get their licenses back once they are meeting their child support obligations.
Very good.
I do have somebody from the agency here if members have questions. I don't know if she wants to add anything to that or if that was all right. I'm getting the nod that that's sufficient. So she's here for questions if anyone has any.
I see. Then let me just ask real quick if anybody in the audience wants to testify on this bill 3735. Seeing none, let's proceed with questions here. And Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is, you know, maybe to the author, maybe to your testifier, your would-be testifier, I should say. on 1.7 and 1.8, it looks like you're removing notification to the obligor and also taking away a right to a hearing. And you're just going right to the judge. And is the first, if this is true, then is the first notice that they have is when you show up to get their license or if they're stopped and
Jim Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This actually has to do with when they're trying to get the license back. Currently, we're requiring them to kind of jump through some hoops and go through a hearing, and this would actually make it easier for them to get that license back without having to go through a hearing. So that's what the notice is about. Currently, you would have to have a hearing in order to get your license back, and the idea is that if you've paid back your obligations, we shouldn't have to make you come in affirmatively and have a hearing and take time off from work. You know, if you've paid back your obligation, we should just be making it easier for you to get those licenses back.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Beckerfin, I like the general idea of your bill, but Mr. Chair, the motion is to send this to the general register, and in 518A, that has to do with judiciary or public safety. Should we be sending that? Representative Beckerfin.
Representative Beckerfin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. This language is moving in another larger bill as well. And so it's already scheduled to be, I think it was heard actually in judiciary today, and then is also going to be heard in HHS policy, just trying to make sure that this language gets done this year. So it's just kind of a tick in all the boxes.
Good.
Chair, I like the idea of making things easier. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Representative Lewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, this comment would be not on this bill, but when we get done, I just want to get a scope of where we're really at here on hearing bills and deadlines.
Okay, we'll hold on that.
Yeah, I see. We've still got this bill before us.
Sure do.
Any other comments, questions, members? Seeing none, Representative Becker Finn, closing comments?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would appreciate your support. I think there's a common sense thing we can do for folks. I would renew my motion that House File 3735 be referred to the General Register.
Very good. You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Representative Luke.
Yeah, just a general question for the chair. Do we have an idea of how many bills we have within the scope of the committee here that still haven't had a hearing? Because we're obviously running parallel paths. We do things like that to make sure we make deadlines. So about how many have we got before us right now that haven't been heard? I mean, ballpark?
I'm advised that staff can look that up and get back to you. I know we're scheduling hearings pretty much out to the end and trying to keep them so they're within, you know, the time frame. That
Mr. Chair, here's my concern. Sure. We're you know, this last bill was what showed up on the 24th of February. Nothing against the bill specifically, but we've got bills that are much older than that, and they haven't came before the committee. So do we have some kind of roadmap, or, you know, what about the whole spectrum here? I mean, have we just done a numbers look to see, you know, what's going to be heard and what's not going to be heard? Because, you know, once we miss first deadline, you know, so I'm just trying to get an idea here, because there probably isn't enough 5 o'clock and 8 o'clock hearing time left between now and first deadline if we don't get that down to what are we really going to hear.
Right, right. You know? And, well, we're working on it. There are quite a few bills. That's all I know for sure. So let me get the numbers and get back to you.
And, of course, we always want to know, is there any of them there? Any minority bills might show up?
I'm advised there's one tomorrow.
Ah.
So be sure and be here, please.
They need the votes.
Yeah. Well put, well put. No, we don't. No further, no more bills here tonight, so members, we are adjourned.